Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and it is Monday, March 15th, the Ides of March. So if you're wearing a toga, beware. But I hope you're not wearing a toga today. We have a lovely show for the Ides of March today. Our good friends from NAESP are here, the National Association of Elementary School Principals. We've got Dr. Gracie Branch, okay? And Gracie is the Associate Executive Director to my good friend Earl Franks, but she's in charge of professional learning at NAESP. And we also have the director of the National P3 Center on Early Education. She's also an associate clinical professor in Denver at the University of Colorado's Denver School of Education and Human Development, which is going to be key to all this, Dr. Christy Cowers. And it's going to be a nice show. We're going to talk about the principal's role. Remember, NAESP is the National Association of Elementary School Principals. The principal's role and a new guide for a principal to be able to manage early learning and the early grades, and we're talking pre-K through third. And if you think about that, a lot of that is outside the school building. That pre-K, a lot of it goes out into the neighborhoods, et cetera, okay, at least from my understanding of it. There's a lot of family engagement that has to be involved. And we're going to talk to both Christy and Gracie about this today. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. I invite my guests and you to go over to ace-ed.org, which is the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. And, of course, what makes our site so special is our magazine, which is called Equity in Access, which is an online journal. It's over there. Just you'll see the giant icon of the cover. Just flip right through. You'll enjoy all the articles. We are the only magazine that's covering specifically and 100% equity in access pre-K-12. All right, so you'll enjoy the magazine, or you'll see an icon for our podcast. You'll go over there. You'll see all the podcasts that we've done. You can listen to any that you like. We'll have this one up there sometime later today. All right, and also we have a lot of great information, all kinds of other stuff that's going on, all about equity and access in pre-K-12 over at ace-ed.org. Again, the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. And without further ado, good morning, Dr. Gracie Branch. I'm Larry.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Well, I'm fine for a Monday morning. How are you doing today, Gracie?
I'm doing great. We have some great spring weather here in Oklahoma, where I'm calling from. So it's nice, things are warming up.
And I understand the wind comes whipping down the plains out there. Am I correct?
It certainly does.
It does indeed. It's windy up here today in Maine, but I bet it's warmer down there. Okay, Christy, how are you today? How's the snow? Did it melt yet? You got snow, didn't you?
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me. I was just going to say, we are blizzarded in. It is officially a blizzard day. We had about 18 inches of snow at my house.
Wow.
But the sun is out today, so we're going to start digging out as soon as I hang up.
Yeah. Was it just your house, or did it cover the rest of Denver as well?
It covered the rest of Denver in the Front Range.
You really got 18 inches. Wow.
Yeah, we really did. Yeah.
Are you right downtown, or where are you?
No, I live north of Denver. I'm in Erie. So it's
former
farm country. Yeah.
Oh, I know. I used to travel out to Longmont and Boulder and all those places out there.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So I know it well. And it was a long time. So Longmont was a pretty small town. I imagine it's grown pretty big right now. Okay,
sure,
and you must be right out there
sure
somewhere, right?
I sure am. I'm very close to Longmont.
There you go.
So we have
okay
a perfect Colorado day. White fields and blue skies.
And tomorrow it'll be 55 degrees because you're high desert.
It is actually, it is exactly supposed to be 65 degrees by the weekend.
I rest my case, okay? So it is a beautiful spot, but I know you guys got slammed yesterday. I didn't realize it was 18 inches. That'd be a lot of snow, okay? In Oklahoma, no earthquakes. I'm tired of earthquakes in Oklahoma. No earthquakes lately, right, Gracie? There's
no earthquakes lately.
Good. Excellent. Okay, ladies. This is really interesting. Again, by the way, Kaylin Tucker, thank you. My friend Earl Franks, thank you. All those folks over at NAESP for helping me put together the show. Who wrote, Christy, did you write this, or did you write this new guide? Or who did this, Christy?
I I wrote it in collaboration with three of my colleagues at the National T3 Center, two of them whom are former elementary school principals. But my center exists to sort of think about this space between pre-K and elementary school and how we can create a more coherent experience for young children and their families.
And that's hard to do because, as I was saying at the beginning of the show, a lot of that is outside the building. And, again, you guys are the Principals Association, which I find absolutely amazing. I want to go back in history to when I was a kid. Okay, you ready? This is over 12,000 years ago. Dinosaurs roamed the earth. Okay, that's not true. Okay. Okay. People wore togas. No, they didn't. Okay, you ready? So when I was a kid and I started when I was a kid, nobody, okay, knew how to read until we got to elementary school. Okay, there was no school for anybody, really, till kindergarten. We were 5 years old, and our mothers walked us to school. That obviously has changed, and I think that has changed for the better, if I do say so myself. What have we learned, okay, over the 300 years since I was a kid, okay, that makes preschool so darn important? I am a great advocate of preschool, but I'm always wondering, how far back do we have to go? How far back is pre? Okay, Christy, it's all yours, and you can swing it with Gracie if you want, but right now I want to talk to you because you're the National P3, I guess that's preschool through 3 center. Go ahead, talk about it, Christy. How far back are we talking about fetal education? Where are we here? Talk to me.
You bet. So there's several answers to that question. The guide that we're talking about today that we did in collaboration with NAESP really thinks about pre-K in terms of those first 2 years prior to kindergarten, so 3 and 4 years.
Okay, cool.
However, my center also thinks about birth through third grade.
And I rest my case.
There are even some sections in the report that talk about the importance of principals understanding child development and brain development, because what we know increasingly from science, and this has changed quite a bit, our understanding of science has changed quite a bit since both you and I were in elementary school, is that the rapidity and the importance of those years of learning and development that happen from birth prior to kindergarten. It is an abundance of development. Children are not only learning, not only sort of developing physically. Clearly, we see kids learn to walk and we see them learn to skip.
Yep.
But we're also seeing them develop some critical learning skills like executive function and self-regulation and negotiating with peers and with adults. They're learning how to be in this world. And those are the kinds of skills that we want principals to better understand, so that they can help support all of the different learning contexts where children are prior to entering the school door.
That was a great example, and you brought up one of my major complaints about teacher education. I hope it's changed since I was involved in it. And that is that what you're talking about is neuroscience and the science of learning, the brain development, the science of learning, et cetera. And believe me, when I was in teacher training, it was so long ago, they only didn't even did just learning about the brain, okay, that we all had one, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do enough, in my opinion, to talk about the science of how people learn, which brings me to Gracie. Gracie, you're in charge of professional learning. You do all the work. You're assistant executive director over at the great organization, my good friends, NAESP, okay? When you talk to principals today, you're asking them to go back to understand what goes into development from a kid who's going to start at their school when the child is 5 years old, but they need to know more about it from the very, very beginning. Put principals into this mix. Gracie, it's all on you now, Dr. Gracie. Go ahead.
Well, Larry, you know, over the past 40 years, there's been such more of an emphasis on locally funded pre-K Head Start, high-quality child care before formal entry into school. And so, and the studies demonstrate that there's some positive impacts on children's skills and knowledge at the end of the pre-K year, and that
Absolutely.
These longer term have positive outcomes into adulthood with increased rates of employment and earnings and lower rates of adult poverty and arrest. So making sure that principals understand, you know, it's so wonderful that this investment in early learning can lead to big dividends later on for kids on into adulthood. And so making sure that we give principals, and that's what NAASP is trying to do, provide the professional learning that gives principals the skills that they need to lead these early learning communities, but like Christy talked about, really focusing on that continuum pre-K through third grade.
Well, how far back, Gracie, can a school district reach out? This is the question. How far back can they go and reach out when the kid, so to speak, becomes theirs for learning? And I know parents and play have a lot to do with it, but I mean just in terms of formal education structure. Okay, how far back can we ask a building principal or a school district through their building principal to go back and grab the kids as early as possible? It's difficult, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I think you're absolutely right. But I'm wondering how the structure of that begins through an elementary mm-hmm. school principal and through the school district. Then I'm going to get back to Christy in a minute. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I will tell you that we have a great example that Christy and her team included in the book. They spotlighted a school principal that he has a team. And even before those kids that are in his neighborhood in the district get to their school, they're doing home visits. They're including families in those school events, Larry, before they officially start school. So they're building those relationships. They're getting to know those families so that they've already done so much of the foundation and groundwork before those kids actually start pre-K in their school. And I know it takes a lot of focused effort and planning and commitment on a school's part to do that. But we really talk about looking outside the walls of your school into the families that surround it, into the community, and start building those relationships and collaborations and partnerships. And Christy, I'll let you elaborate on that.
And by the way, that was beautifully said, Gracie. I just want to say, and that is what family engagement is all about. Okay?
Yes.
It really is. And Christy, go ahead. You go. Talk about your national P3 center and all that. But I do agree with you. You know, with all of you, but I'm always concerned, and I know you guys are too, how the principals, how the school district is trained in these areas, okay? Because I'm not so sure. You can talk about that, Christy, if you want to, how well-trained they are in truly, you know, we talk about birth through 5 years old, okay? How well-trained are they in understanding the neuroscience behind that? That's not their fault, but do we have to start including that? And then making sure that they are the ones reaching out, is it their responsibility? Christy, go. I love this.
Yes. Oh, my goodness, Larry. I wish we had all day. There's multiple topics there to touch on.
Let me pick up 30 minutes. Go for it. It's almost like all day. And remember,
let me pick
Christy,
up where Gracie left off.
Christy, every minute we spend talking means you don't think about with your snow shovel. Every minute. So just enjoy it.
Fair point. Fair point. So let me start where Gracie left off, is that we actually have an abundance of good examples around the country of how schools are building those partnerships and relationships. I want to expand the focus just a little bit. Gracie focused on how principals are building relationships with families, and there are schools that do home visits. There are principals and district central offices that are sending letters to parents when babies are born saying, someday your child's going to be entering our school walls. let us help you, let us help connect you with libraries and book lending places and family support programs. So there's connecting with families, and I think that's really important.
It
the
is.
The other set of examples that we see, though, are principals who are building relationships with those learning early learning programs in the community, whether it be the Mother Goose Child Care Center in the neighborhood, the Head Start program, where they're building networks that support the teachers in those programs. So, for example, the teachers of early learning programs are joining district professional development opportunities with kindergarten teachers, first, second, and third grade teachers to deepen their understanding of children's learning and development, to talk about curriculum, to talk about how best to create the learning environments that support young children. Now, as Gracie said, these require dedication, perseverance, tenacity, and a real commitment to early learning. But we do have examples of schools all around the country that are creating this web of learning support for young children and their families. Then I want to pick up
Larry.
By the way,
I just want you to know that you don't know them, Christy and Gracie. You should. I work closely with two districts who do just that. Okay, and I'm just going to tell you which ones they are. You can follow up with them. Okay, West Valley in Washington State, which is near Yakima. Okay.
Peter
and
Finch.
Up in,
I know him well. Yes, we
Peter Finch and the gang. And then up in Michigan, Eddie Manusak. Do you know this?
Yes,
okay,
I sure do.
Good. Eddie Manusak in Dundee Community Schools in Michigan. And Eddie is a superintendent who was a kindergarten teacher. Okay,
That's right.
A rare breed there. Okay, and
what
they do is just wonderful, and what you guys are doing is wonderful, but it's hard to do. It's hard to
do.
And you may continue.
I'm
Who's
glad,
talking? Gracie or Christy?
Christy?
Who is this?
This is Christy, and I'm glad you brought up both of those examples because I wanted to circle back to a question you asked earlier, which is there are elementary principals, and NAESP and Gracie and Dr. Franks are clearly holding up their end of the principal support. But we also know that principals work inside school districts. And so we also need to be thinking about district and central office understanding of how important these early years are. And our districts finding ways to support not only principals, but to organize their own infrastructure in a way that signals to school boards, communities, families, that they recognize that these early learning and early grade years are truly foundational to the rest of success. You had started about when we started this call that you didn't start to read until you entered school.
I distinctly remember that. Yeah.
Whereas I have an older sister who came home and taught me everything. So I was reading by the time I hit kindergarten because my sister would come home and teach me everything.
Oh, there you go. That's a cheat, but I'll let you do that. That's okay, Chris.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I do think, and I want to say this carefully, I do think we overemphasize reading as a discrete thing that happens during early learning and the early grades. Now, don't get me wrong. I think learning to read is a social justice issue. We absolutely have to ensure that every child gets the kind of reading instruction that is going to let them be successful later in life. But what we know, again, from child development, is that you don't just learn to read by looking at books. There are a whole host of other skills, our social and emotional skills. I'm going to go back to our executive function skills. The background knowledge that children get by being exposed to different readings and different experiences that lay the foundation for being strong readers. And so this whole complex set of learning experiences is what we really hope principals, in collaboration with their district leaders, are going to prioritize more and put in place the structures and professional support that are going to make that a reality for every child.
I hope you are absolutely right, because you won't get a stronger advocate of pre-K, okay, than yours truly, okay? And I always use the analogy, which is so obvious. You build a good foundation, you build a better house, and that's been proven time and time again, not just in architecture, but in education. It just happens to be a fact. But you mentioned, and I mentioned earlier, we have our Consortium for Equity in Education. We're very concerned, and you mentioned this a minute ago, that all children get this, okay? And I want you to talk for a second. You're in Denver, okay, big city. I want you to talk about urban. I worry that how are we doing in urban education and maybe rural too, the two that are the two, or the two bookends of that world in the middle, okay? And how are we doing in reaching out to people in these early years? Those kids, without question, need the same, okay, education. How are we doing on that, Christy? Or Gracie, I'll give it to Christy, but you can give it to Gracie if you give Gracie. Let me make a suggestion. You can give Gracie all the hard questions, okay, Christy? Go ahead.
I mean, you bring up the two examples that I think are really challenging for completely different reasons. So let's start on the urban front. In urban areas, there tends to be a lot more early learning programs, Head Start programs, child care centers, community-based preschools, serving young children, which is on the one hand a good thing, but it makes this coordination and alignment a little more complex. Because you think about a big school district like the city and county of Denver, which is also the same boundaries for the school district, one of the 100 largest school districts in the country. And you ask an elementary principal to understand all of the different places where her kindergarten children are coming from. That's a big task.
Tough.
But in these urban areas, we often find other partners who we actually talk about in the NAESP guide who should be part of these learning communities related to early learning and the early grades. Here in Colorado, they happen to be early childhood councils. We have a network of councils that are regionally based all across the state. They serve as great connectors between early childhood programs and school districts. So in urban areas, the collaborations can be harder, but the access and the possibilities are also greater.
Interesting.
I'm going to talk about rural areas, and then I want to make one last point, and then I'll have Gracie chime in. Rural areas, it can often be very different because many lack that robust number of early childhood centers or other programs. School districts or the elementary school may be the only place in town that children are going, including for pre-K, because Head Start programs and others may be seeing the school district as the best place to deliver those early learning services. And so so the school becomes even more important. But then we have to be thinking about things like transportation. School buses weren't really built for four-year-olds. So we have to be thinking about what are the ways to safely transport little kids. Four-year-olds don't necessarily need to be in school buses for an entire hour to get to or from, you know, the long distance. So there's other challenges to think about. And this is where I actually think the pandemic, I don't want to say too many good things are coming out of it because I think we're all so grateful.
Yeah, there's a couple. I know. We all go through that.
Seeing the end in sight. However, I think there's been a lot of creativity led in many places by schools about how to serve our youngest children in these spaces where we don't want them staring at screens all the time, and we don't want to somehow digitize early childhood learning. But they're finding ways to send, you know, activity packets home and activity boxes home so families can help facilitate the learning. So I do think the urban and rural challenges are different. The last point, and then I will stop and let Gracie chime in, is in all of these areas, urban or rural, we have some really profound equity issues to deal with.
We sure do.
In terms of who's getting access, who's not getting access, who's getting access to high quality, who's getting access to less than ideal quality. And this is, we actually devote an entire competency in the new NAESP book to thinking about these issues of disparities and disproportionalities of who's in, who's out, who's getting high quality, and who's not. And ironically, given the way the early childhood system has grown up in this country, with Head Start, many of our state-funded pre-K programs have income eligibilities. The greatest lack of access is not just with our lowest income children, but with that sort of working poor area where they make too much to qualify for Head Start. They certainly can't pay for it all on their own like many families can. And so there is a real need to think about how to serve a pocket of our socioeconomic families that need greater support in order to access these programs. And we see school districts and schools finding creative solutions all over the place. In fact, West Valley School District in Washington, and in fact, the entire state of Washington, is doing some really creative things around a new transitional kindergarten program that is not kindergarten redux, but it is the year before kindergarten, and school districts are actively offering it to children who don't have access to other early learning programs.
It's a tough question, and you're right, it is an equity question. And it's, if I may, before we go over to Gracie, it is a cultural question as well. Okay, we deal with a lot of people from different cultures, and we have to reach out to all these people.
That's right.
Okay, and make them feel comfortable with what the school is doing without feeling like we're overdoing it. It's a really difficult thing, but and the end result is well proven, and if we can do this, we're going to be that much better off. Gracie, all this said, okay, down in Oklahoma and everywhere else, what is NAESP doing about this? In particular, you talk about the guide, et cetera, your leadership academy, to make sure the principals are understanding this. And I also want to ask you how you're working with higher education, who is training principals. It shouldn't just be in your bailiwick. They're training principals. Elementary principals need to know the neuroscience. They need to know it. Okay, Gracie?
Right. Well, I'm glad that you brought up our Pre-K Leadership Academy. We have our new guide, which we've been talking about, a principal's guide to early learning in the early grades, pre-K through third grade. And we have a pre-K 3 leadership academy that is really in conjunction with the guide. And our academy is a combination of face-to-face meetings, virtual learning, but it's a blended learning online course where principals work in a cohort to work with a group, and they will work through a 9-month online course that has to do with the 6 competencies that are included in our guide. Mm-hmm. And they get to work with an advisor that helps step them through the coursework, and then they choose one of the competencies so that they can do like an authentic learning project. We call it their capstone, where they can work through one of the competencies and do something that's needed in their school. So we're excited to be able to provide this leadership academy to principals. We have it running in several states. The state of Nebraska will start a new academy in May. The state of Alabama will start one as well. In fact, we're going into our 5th year in Alabama with our pre-K 3 leadership academy. But Larry, it's also set up in a way that we could do it with a school district or a consortium of school districts that wanted to put together a cohort of principals to work through this course.
Well, Gracie, let me ask you, and you brought up something at the end which I wasn't expecting. You talked about Nebraska and Alabama. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So each of the academies are geared to the individual state. I thought that was interesting, that it's not just all the same thing, and like, you know, principals from all over would just do this kind of virtually together, but it's state by state. Am I correct?
Well, it's kind of set up like a collaboration. Like in Alabama, it's a collaborative effort between their early childhood Department of Education, their state association of administrators, and then our national association. So we're all working together to put this academy in place. And in Nebraska, it's a collaboration between their early childhood department and their state Department of Education and NAESP. So,
well, what about like? Let me just ask. What about like Colorado? Mm-hmm. Does Colorado have one? Where Christy is?
We don't have one in. Yeah, we don't have one in place in Colorado at the moment. So just trying to expand our efforts, Larry, and try to get in as many states as possible.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, we've talked about setting up the academy in a way that individual principals could go through. So we're hoping that the new guide will also be an impetus for that work.
I'm sure it will be. This is really cool. It's very important work. And let me ask you the second part of my question earlier, which is, how is NAESP working, if they are, I assume you are, with higher education? Okay. The people, you know, everybody starts off as a teacher, all the principals, then they go back to school and they get their master's in administration or whatever. But that has changed, and no offense to colleges, but they can be a little behind the times sometimes, the education departments. No offense, guys. You've told me that yourselves. Okay? They have. All right? So my point is, okay, NAESP is on top of this stuff. They're on top of today's needs for an elementary school principal. Okay? So how are you guys putting it together with higher education, which to me is incredibly important?
Right. It is, Larry, and I would just say that's a work in progress. I think that our collaboration with the National P3 Center, you know, that's out of the University of Colorado at Denver, is a great start. Christy and I talk all the time about how to expand this work and our partnership and collaborations. And then I think it's like I've tried to help it impact everything I do. I was on an advisory board meeting Friday with the state, with the Superintendents Association, with some people of higher ed. And when we were talking about the work, people just were saying K-20 or K-12. And I said, we've got to put the pre-K in there. So
thank you.
All of our interactions support that work.
Exactly.
And like I said, it is a work in progress. But Christy and I are kind of we're always brainstorming how we can get together and do new things. And you can expound on that, Christy.
And it's really something. And Christy, you know, you are a professor at the School of Education. But every time I go to a meeting or something of the professors, and I really talk to them, they all say to me, "We admit we're a little bit behind the times."
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know that. And,
yeah.
You know what's going on in the trenches. And I'm not. But you're doing something. Okay, you're a specialist, if I may, in education reform. I know that. And you are the director of this National P3 Center, which is an action organization. Okay? So when you talk to the professors who are training principals, how's that conversation go, if I may? Don't mention any names.
Yeah, no,
Dr. Smith and Dr. Jones. Go ahead.
So you're accurate. I do think higher ed is one of the most conservative enterprises on the planet. Conservative meaning slow to change. But I do see real promising areas of reform. So, for example, as you've just noted, I'm at University of Colorado, Denver. We are planning to launch our own, you asked this earlier, we'll be launching a leadership certificate program that will be credit bearing. This is another piece that I think is very interesting in this whole puzzle in term between principal professional learning and higher ed. Is I also ran a similar certificate program when I was at University of Washington for 8 years. And one of the things we heard was, gosh, there are so many professional learning opportunities, and our time is very limited. As you know, principals are being asked to solve just about every problem on the planet right now.
That's
and
right.
And so
you're
principals
right.
said, how do we, you know, how it's hard to prioritize. It would be helpful if these programs got us something, either got us something towards our certification or recertification, got us higher ed credits towards a degree. And so we did that at University of Washington, and we're now trying to replicate that here in Colorado.
Cool.
And I do think this is where there needs to be an intersect with higher ed, is finding ways to create credit-bearing professional learning opportunities as a baby step. A next thing, my next frontier of work, is to
considering your job, baby steps, as we've already learned in this show, are incredibly important. They're going to make big results at the end.
Exactly. The next frontier for me, like in the next academic year, is to begin working with the principal licensure program at CU Denver to change the coursework so that it's not just this would be an interesting tag on of professional learning, but to integrate it throughout their curriculum to say, if you're going to get certified as a principal, you will have some content in child development and early learning.
Beautiful.
You will have some content in learning environments, not just for pre-K, but also through those primary grades. And we do see some other states, for example, the state of Illinois did a pretty interesting thing a few years ago where they changed state law. Where the law now says any higher ed program providing principal licensure must include some child development content.
Good.
So now we have higher ed institutions across the entire state of Illinois.
It didn't before.
Most don't. But most don't. Most state laws don't.
I didn't realize it was that bad. Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing.
So there's work to be done, I would argue, at the state policy level. And we've just sort of touched on certification standards for principals and teachers. I also think there's work to be done at the state policy level around learning standards. But that's a different conversation.
Yeah,
all to say, I do think there's a lot of work happening. And the other thing of note, and this is not to take away from NAESP's Leadership Academy program, which I do think is a shining star in the country. My center has also identified there are about 14 other smallish leadership programs like that up and running in different places. University of Connecticut has one. Georgia, they have an early childhood advocacy organization running one in the Atlanta area. The state of Minnesota, through their Department of Education, is running one. So we do see pockets of bright spots. And what Gracie was mentioning, where she and I are working very tightly together, is we're trying to figure out how to lift up all of these bright spots, infuse them with high quality content, to come back to
Beautiful.
The guide that which just came out, so that we have more good things happening in more good places.
Yeah, and well coordinated, so it makes sense, so that it's in line with what's going on in classrooms today. And needless to say, with all this pandemic, things have changed again. Okay, so we got to be right on top of stuff. The parents are demanding of this, and the communities are demanding of this, and it falls on. It falls completely 100% on Gracie. I'm sorry, Gracie. I'm only kidding. It doesn't fall with you. But you're an expert at fixing it up. Okay? You ladies are wonderful. I can't thank you enough. Okay? It's just great. Gracie, it's wonderful to have you here. And Christy, you just have fun. Did you have a snowblower? Or what happened? What's happening out there?
No, I have a big, strong husband.
That's good. Hire a plow guy. Hire a plow guy.
Use my shovel.
Yeah, hire a plow guy. Oh, my God. 18 inches. I can't. It'll all melt tomorrow. Just hang out. Drink hot chocolate today. It'll be gone by tomorrow. Come on. It'll be 65 tomorrow. Okay? Relax and enjoy. Both of you are wonderful. Just keep up the good work. You're doing great. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having us, Larry.
Thank you for having us,
Larry. My pleasure. And I might add the audience's pleasure as well. Thanks, ladies. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Gracie Branch. Dr. Branch is the NAESP Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning. And Christy Cowers, Dr. Cowers, is Director of the National P3 Center, pre-K through 3 Center, with how they should all be coordinated together. Okay, at the University of Colorado, Denver, their School of Education, also Human Development. Okay, we'll archive at ace-ed.org. Go over, see what we're doing. Look at our magazine. If you want to join with us, it's all free. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. See you tomorrow.